Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds Podcast with your host, Simone Simaluka-Radzins. Join me where I'll take you inside the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. Connect with me on Calligia.com and follow us on social media as well. And here's today's show. On today's show, we have Susan Marks, who is an RN, BSN, PHN, but more importantly than anything, she's a cannabis nurse and a member of the American Cannabis Nurses Association. She's dedicated to ensuring patients receive the qualified counseling they need to safely and effectively use medical cannabis to manage their health conditions, treat an illness, and reduce their intake on pharmaceuticals. Nurse Susan is the founder of DearNurseSusan.com, an online and offline resource to provide patient consulting, dispensary education, and more. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Simone. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Oh, it's about time. I feel like I should have got you on the show like years ago now.
Oh, well, I'm happy to be here today, so thank you.
Yes, you're very welcome. So, you know, before I start getting into like all of these questions, I know what an RN is, you know, a registered nurse, but what's a BSN and a PHN?
So the BSN stands for Bachelor of Science in Nursing. So you can have a number of different degrees and still be an RN. Mm. And then the PHN is a public health nurse, which was basically a subspecialty when I was in school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's it. That's very impressive. Okay. Because I was like, wow. I was like, there's a lot of credentials.
Yeah. Well, I'm in, as you know, I'm in a master's program to get my nurse practitioner. So there will be another set of initials after that.
Oh, my goodness. And what are the set of initials after a nurse practitioner?
It'll be an FNP for family nurse practitioner.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's so excellent.
Yeah, I was doing that just so I could, you know, a lot of my patients, they want to get off of pharmaceutical drugs. And with just an RN license, I really can't manage their drugs.
Oh.
So I have to refer them to their physician. But once I get my my FNP, then I will be able to prescribe as well as help people wean themselves off of the pharmaceuticals.
Oh my gosh, that's like so incredible. I wanted to start with asking you about your entrepreneurial journey of getting into this space, but I guess we started with, you know, there's so much fear with licensed professionals of, you know, getting into the cannabis industry, of losing their licenses, of, you know, being, you know, getting in trouble with perhaps the federal or the state government. But from a medical perspective, it is the most important and fundamental thing to get, you know, licensed physicians and licensed nurses to help support an understanding of, you know, the benefits of cannabis. How was it for you when you decided to, you know, say, hey, I have a lot, quote unquote, to lose here because I have these, you know, official titles. I've gone through this education system where I really didn't learn anything about cannabis, but I'm going to take this leap of faith and realize that I need to help a lot of people. Like, how did you make that decision?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually came from my own personal experience as a cannabis patient. I was on, speaking of pharmaceutical drugs, I was on anti-seizure meds to control a neurological movement disorder that I have. And the drugs were just horrible. And I got desperate and started researching because cannabis was never part of my life. You know, I never related it to medicine or health or anything like that. So in my own research, as I learned more about it and was able to wean myself off of the anti-seizure meds and be able to manage all my tremors with cannabis, and I felt so much better, and there's so much great information about how helpful cannabis is for so many different things. You know, I wanted people to know about it. I felt they needed to know about it because it's such a great alternative to what we are, you know, kind of been conditioned to think as a good medical treatment plan, which includes all kinds of pharmaceuticals and you know, non-natural types of remedies. So anyway, it was just, you know, my own experience and my own, you know, my gratitude toward the plant, toward having this available for us. And so, yeah, so that's why I got into it. I know a lot of healthcare practitioners really aren't, they're kind of afraid actually to get into it, even though I don't know how founded fears are, because, for example, physicians, they're afraid to lose their DEA license, which allows them to prescribe. Mm-hmm. And that is a, you know, it is a concern. Way back, right after California legalized cannabis, the federal government threatened physicians and said that they would take away their medical license in the event that they talked about cannabis or prescribed it or anything. And it was actually the Court of Appeals who said, you know, they can't do that. But it had its effect. You know, physicians are very gun shy about it. Just about every cannabis conference that I go to, there's always a breakout session for physicians on the legal issues of cannabis, just to try to make them understand what the real situation is. And I agree with you. I think with the medical profession embracing cannabis, that's going to be really the driving force behind the social acceptance of it.
Yeah. 100%. And then I was shocked to find, you know, because I'm not a medical professional myself, my neighbor's going through this like pharmacy school, and she showed me her curriculum, and then we were just talking about, you know, the ties between, you know, the pharmacist schools and the actual pharmaceutical companies, and how, you know, you're kind of recruited quite young to learn about the benefits of pharmaceuticals, but it seems that there's not really that, well, actually, I think you are the training program right now to teach people the benefits of cannabis that are trying to get into this field, right? Like, I feel like, you know, what you're doing with your learning education, it seems that you're trying to teach people some of the stuff that you know to give them guidance on, you know, the endocannabinoid system, what is dosing, you know, products, all that stuff. Am I right? Like, is that what your main focus is on for the training program?
Pretty much. I have a couple of different audiences. So, for example, yesterday I was up at Henry Mayo Hospital doing an in-service for their physical therapy department. So I had about 30 physical therapists who I polled, and I said, okay, so how many people here were taught about the endocannabinoid system? And not one person raised their hands. And these are younger types of physical therapists. And I know that in my master's program, they don't really talk about the endocannabinoid system. In medical schools, they aren't talking about it. Mm-hmm. So it's whenever any healthcare organization asked me to come and do an in-service, I do that. I also have online training for bud tenders. I'm developing some continuing education accredited courses for nurses. And then I also teach my individual clients, as well as, you know, doing public education. So I try to, you know, whoever will want to listen, I'm happy to talk to them about it.
Well, I hope everybody wants to listen. And so I think that there's probably a ton of listeners that are like, well, what is an endocannabinoid system? Can you give us just like a brief overview of what an endocannabinoid system is?
Sure. So the endocannabinoid system is one of our bodily systems, similar to the nervous system, the, you know, musculoskeletal system. But the purpose and the function of the endocannabinoid system is to maintain balance or homeostasis within the body. So the definition of disease is a lack of homeostasis. So that's why cannabis is so effective with so many different diseases, is because your body makes its own cannabinoids. So cannabinoids are the molecular compounds found in cannabis. The body makes its own endocannabinoids. Two of them are anandamide and 2-AG. And basically, they interact with receptors throughout our body to bring back into balance whatever is out of balance. So if you have autoimmune disease and your immune system is in overdrive and it's attacking your normal system, cannabis is an immune system modulator, which means it will downregulate the immune system. So people with autoimmune disease don't need to be on such high doses of prednisone or methotrexate or, you know, some very, very strong pharmaceutical drugs. So that's basically the endocannabinoid system, and it works not only with autoimmune disease, but for example, you know, pretty much everybody has some cancer cells growing because, you know, it's just an error in the replication of the cells. So that is also considered an imbalance by the body. So it will attack and take care of the abnormal cells. That's something that our body is doing every single day. But when the cancer cells gets, you know, they get too big or they're proliferating and growing too quickly and the body can't keep up with it with its own endocannabinoids, if you supplement your body with phytocannabinoids, which means it comes from a plant, which is cannabis, and you're giving your body the raw material it needs to stay healthy, to have homeostasis, to fight whatever needs to be, you know, fought or bring back into balance, it has that raw material to do it. So it's tapping into the body's own innate healing process.
Wow, that's, because honestly, I get a little overwhelmed. I'm like, I didn't even realize that aspect of the bringing into balance. It's almost like the yin and the yang of, you know, how can you balance your body? I had no idea.
Yeah, that, you know, it's funny you say yin and yang, because the first recorded use of cannabis was with the emperor in China, who was known as the father of Chinese medicine. And he describes cannabis as having both yin and yang, which is exactly the homeostatic, you know, properties of cannabis. So you tapped right into that, Simone. You're so intuitive.
Oh, no, that's so crazy, because, you know, one of the things that I've been on a quest for, it just, there's no time right now, is I'm trying to understand the backdated history of cannabis prohibition internationally, because I remember reading, you know, there's this, maybe it's the same guy, but this, you know, they found cannabis in a Chinese grave in a tomb, and I'm like, well, cannabis obviously was very, very important if somebody's getting buried with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm on this quest, and I don't know when I'm gonna continue or really start it truly, but it's fascinating. One thing I know, you work with obviously humans, but what about pets? I've just noticed that there's so much like CBD, like a lot of healing for pets as well. Do you know anything about, like, do animals have an endocannabinoid system as well?
Yes, actually all mammals do, and I've heard some scientists say that all creatures down to to sponges, you know, the organisms in the ocean, have endocannabinoid systems or something similar, which really does make sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, with pets, since they have an endocannabinoid system and they have issues with inflammation, with pain, with aging, with, you know, all of those things, cannabis is very helpful for that. In fact, I have probably a dozen four-legged clients that I'm working with, and it's very fun because their owners, obviously pets can't talk, but their owners get so excited because the dog's wagging its tail more, it's eating better, and it's just, you know, they can actually see the improvement, and they're so, you know, people love their pets.
Yeah.
And to see your pet go from kind of, you know, laying around all day to, you know, having some energy and pep, it just, you know, it just warms their hearts. So,
oh my gosh, totally.
Yeah. So the thing that you do need to remember with pets is, really kind of keeping the THC level down to a minimum. They tolerate the CBD and the other cannabinoids very well. but THC can be a problem, and it's also a problem when they ingest cannabis accidentally. If their owners leave, especially edibles, if they leave edibles out in, you know, an easy reach of the pet, you know, the pet doesn't know, and it eats the whole thing and could be getting, you know, 100 milligrams of THC, and then they start drooling and acting very strange and not being able to walk, and it's a scary thing for the pet owner, and they usually end up taking the pet to the vet, and, you know, I've never read anything where a pet has, you know, died or anything, but
it's just that, yeah, because you're witnessing. It's like, you know, I think that anybody that's been in the cannabis industry for a minute who's had edibles, unfortunately, has always had a horror story with edibles where mm-hmm. you feel like you're dying, but at least you can articulate that. And with a pet who can't articulate anything, I can imagine how scary it would be for an owner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So really keep your cannabis locked and on a top shelf somewhere so kids and pets can't get to it.
Oh my gosh, totally. And then one other conversation that I know we had in the last like few weeks that I was shocked about, just as we talk about, like, just segueing in a little bit about patient treatment of what you've been doing and, you know, what type of patients you're helping. You know, you mentioned that depending on your age, you'll have a very different reaction to cannabis. And I was really surprised to hear that.
Yeah. It's actually on dosing.
Okay.
Yeah. Because usually with medications, the dosage is calculated as the number of milligrams of the medicine per kilogram of the patient per day. So it's really, it's typically dependent on, you know, your body mass, how large you are. With cannabis, it's more about age. So the younger you are and the higher your metabolism, the more cannabis you can tolerate and the more that you need to manage your symptoms. Whereas an elderly person who's got a very slow metabolism mm-hmm. needs a very small dose, really a micro dose, to get the effects that they're looking for. So, and that's the point of dosing, is to find the lowest effective dose mm-hmm. because you don't want to... It's expensive. You know, cannabis is expensive, and it's actually out of reach for a lot of people, which I think is just such a shame.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have to take more than you need.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find your lowest effective dose, you know, the dose at which you're getting the effects that you're looking for, then, you know, it pretty much... You can stay at that dose. It's not like your opioids where you develop a tolerance and have to keep increasing the dose. If you're using it for medical purposes and you're using it strategically and responsibly,
yeah.
you don't need to worry about that. There are people who ingest a considerable amount of THC and do develop that tolerance where they need to increase the dose to get the same effect.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing with cannabis is all you need to do is abstain from consuming cannabis for about 48 hours and your body resets. So you can start again at a much lower dose. So,
oh my gosh, that's so great. I'm like taking notes. What?
Don't you love this plant?
Oh,
I love this plant.
I really do. Okay, so Nurse Susan, what I'm so impressed though is that, you know, we talked about not learning this in traditional school. How are you getting, like, I know we also talked about, you know, a lot of stuff's going on in Israel, all this stuff. How are you getting this information? Is it through patient treatment? Is it through other research that you're finding in other countries? Like, how are you getting the information?
Well, there are a couple of different ways to learn about this. There are certain experts experts in the field. Mm-hmm. And I had, and you know, they're out there speaking at medical conferences, and medical conferences in cannabis are now very frequent. You know, you could probably find a medical conference every week somewhere in the United States. So there are certain experts who you will see over and over again in those conferences. For example, Christina Sanchez, who is a scientist in Spain, she's been studying the effects of cannabinoids on cancer therapy for about 15 years. So she is frequently a speaker on the latest in the cancer research with cannabis. So if you go on YouTube and you just put in Christina Sanchez, yeah, you can watch all of her lectures. There's another expert up in Northern California. Her name is Mara Gordon. And she has been treating patients together with a group of physicians. And they have been creating data based on, and she really works mainly with extreme cases. So people who have glioblastomas, which are brain tumors, or, you know, they, a lot of times people find her as a last resort because nothing else has worked, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, so she has this incredible database of, based on the cell type of cancer, which strains have been the most effective with all of the patients that she's treated, what kind of dosing, et cetera. I mean, oh, phenomenal. And they're doing something similar to that in Israel. In fact, I'm sure they're way ahead of us because they are in all things cannabis. But they've been doing basically the same thing where they keep track of what's working, because we really don't have any human studies on cannabis, or very few anyway. Mm-hmm. There are a ton of research studies that have been done using mice in vivo, as well as in vitro, meaning in a petri dish. Mm. So, but there just are not enough of the human studies. So if you go on at the National Institutes of Health, they have a database. It's called PubMed, P-U-B-M-E-D. And if you just put in the search bar cannabis or cannabinoids or marijuana, you'll get about 25,000 research study reports that cover everywhere around the world from the very beginning. So, so anyway, just by knowing who the experts are and, you know, learning from their lectures and learning from reading, or, you know,
and clinical. Yes. I mean, you guys are all the pioneers, really. I mean, I think about how ahead, I mean, clearly Israel's ahead of the United States, but then how ahead, you know, a lot of these experts are of the medical profession. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating, and then also frustrating, because it's still a Schedule I substance. It's still federally illegal. Yet there's so many, you know, studies that are happening, and obviously more than anecdotal evidence to support, you know, a deschedule.
Exactly. Yeah. There's one other physician who's in Lawndale. Her name is Dr. Bonnie Goldstein. Mm-hmm. And she primarily works with pediatric patients, which can sometimes be a little bit of a it's kind of a sore subject with people. They say, oh, well, kids shouldn't be on marijuana. And I totally agree if they're not, you know, healthy kids with no medical concerns.
Yeah.
But you really need to, whenever you're using cannabis or any other kind of medication, you need to weigh the risks and the benefits. Yeah. So if there's a child with Dravet syndrome who's having 300 seizures in a week and it's becoming more and more brain damaged, and cannabis will stop those seizures, then of course cannabis has much higher benefit than risk. Yeah. So that's a good way to kind of measure, you know, if it's a good thing to do with kids or with anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So with you, I mean, you get to speak to, you know, physicians, you get to speak to physical therapists, but you get to work with a lot of patients. And mm-hmm. you know, can you talk to us about, I mean, just a few stories of the benefits that you've been able to see with working with some of your patients?
Absolutely. It's my favorite part of the job.
I bet.
I'm telling you, I mean, after 30 years of nursing, where usually it's like, you know, people are very ill and they don't really get that much better. Mm-hmm. When somebody who has a chronic disease like lupus or, you know, chronic pain, and, you know, they have never used cannabis and they're using it for the first time basically out of desperation, and in 2 weeks they're saying, oh my God, I haven't been pain-free in 10 years. Oh. And it is so rewarding, and it happens to me again and again and again. Now, that doesn't mean that cannabis is right for everybody or that it works for everybody, mm-hmm. But with such a good safety profile, it's certainly worth experimenting with. So, you know, I have one client up in Northern California, because most of my clients are down here in Southern California and I can work with them one-on-one face-to-face. But I also work with clients who are either, you know, like Northern California or outside of our state. I work with them, you know, using Skype and weed maps and finding the dispensaries that are closest to them to see what kind of menu items they have, because, you know, going from state to state, every state has kind of its different products and its different medicines. So anyway, I have this client up in Northern California. She had, it's called a necrotic tailbone, meaning that she had an injury that resulted in a disruption of the blood supply to part of her tailbone, which meant that the bone died. And after the injury, she kept complaining, oh my God, this is so painful. And they just thought, well, you know, that's how it goes when you have an injury. And it wasn't until it persisted, you know, for a very long time that they finally did an MRI and found that the actual tailbone was dead. Because when you don't get adequate blood supply to any part or any tissue, that tissue will die. So she's in chronic pain 24 hours a day. She is a professional. I'm not going to give out too much patient information, but she's a professional that requires a license in order to do what she does. So she was very hesitant about trying cannabis. Yeah. She was at the time on 180 milligrams of OxyContin. She's all of like 100 pounds. So, I mean, it was just incredible to me how, you know, she was able to tolerate such a high dose of opioids without, you know, going into respiratory arrest. So anyway, she wanted to get off them. You know, she didn't like being on them. They caused a lot of other problems, you know, constipation, et cetera. Yeah. So anyway, she used cannabis to wean herself from 180 milligrams a day down to 20 milligrams a day.
Wow.
It's a lifesaver, really. Yeah. You know, her risk of accidental death due to overdose is basically non-existent anymore, and that's because of cannabis. And she's still getting her pain relieved. See, that's one of the things with the opioid crisis is, you know, these people, they aren't just out there, you know, using it recreationally and end up getting dependent. It's people who have had injuries, who legitimately have pain and continue to have pain, and you can't just withdraw opioids from somebody who's in pain and say, okay, deal with it. We still need to manage that pain.
Yeah.
So by using cannabis to do that, it's really, to me, it's a no-brainer, but a lot of people say, oh, well, you're just substituting one addiction for another, and just the reduction of harm aspect of cannabis compared to opioids, it's, you know, it's a very weak argument on their part.
But absolutely. But, I think there's the fear factor, because I see it a lot with, like, you know, an older generation that, you know, definitely grew up in the war on drugs kind of mentality of like, oh my God, it's so bad. So like, how do you kind of shift that mentality? But it's so frightening. I was on this discussion panel for opioids, and I mentioned you at this, actually. It was at ABC. Yeah. And hearing some of these people's stories, I think that's the biggest misconception. And just for our listeners, this was a stat like a month or two ago, but like we're in a very serious opioid epidemic in the United States, where more than 115 people die every day from opioid overdoses. And cannabis statistically has been shown in some studies to reduce the effects of opioids. And I think there's this like misjudgment on, you know, what an addiction for opioid is. And when I was at this workshop, I couldn't believe it, but you know, people would tell me they got in a horrible car accident. They had to go to the ER. They were pumped with morphine for 30 days. The doctor didn't tell them how to get off of the morphine. They left. They then went to, you know, their home, and they gave them a ton of medication. So there's no plan to wean people off of these opioids, and they're just getting shoved down poor patients, you know, throats almost, you know, and they're forming this addiction where they don't have the resources, you know, to get off of them. And then it seems like it's just this downward spiral of addiction.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's so sad. I mean, even high school kids who, let's say, are injured in a football game, they get addicted, and, you know, it really is, it can ruin your life. And through no, you know, like irresponsibility on your part. You were simply trying to manage a health situation, and then you get hooked on this substance that is very difficult to get off. And if you don't have the means, like you were saying, to go into a rehab center, although if you don't have the means to do that, that means you have to sweat out going through opioid withdrawals, which is no picnic. It's very difficult. There's such a high, you know, recidivism of going back to the opioids just because they can't tolerate going through the withdrawals. Well, cannabis really helps to subdue all of those withdrawal symptoms, as well as managing their pain, which is why they were doing the opioids in the first place. So, you know, and one of the things that I like to remind people about the opioid epidemic is, you know, we hear a lot about the people that die from the accidental overdose, but there are also a lot of other victims that people don't really talk about. Yeah. In some states, one in four babies is born addicted to opioids, and it goes through opioid withdrawal and needs to be, you know, they're now addicted. So then what happens when they're in high school and they injure themselves and they need narcotics for the first time? They'll immediately be addicted. So, and then the other victim are the kids who have parents that are addicted to opioids and need to be removed from the home. There has been such a dramatic increase in the number of kids who are under state custody because they had to be removed from their home because it was so unsafe. You know, it's the opioid epidemic has this ripple effect that, you know, it's devastating all the way around.
Oh my goodness. Well, and it's crazy. So, I was, you know, of the timeline, I did some research, and I'm mispronouncing it. I know it. You can correct me because you're a nurse. The U.S. Pharmacopoeia or Pharma, how do you pronounce the, is it the Pharmacopoeia?
Well, it's kind of tomato, tomato.
Oh.
I usually call it the Pharmacopoeia.
Oh.
Some people call it the Pharmacopoeia. So it's however you want to say it.
Okay. Well, the Pharmacopoeia, in 1850, cannabis was listed on this to help opioid addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
I'm like, oh my goodness, like, come on, we're in 2018, like, let's push for this a little bit more. So, I mean, that's definitely one of the positive effects. Have you seen also with any of your patients, so clearly pain, seizures, you mentioned some of the experts, like, there's been, you know, some obvious, like, help with cancer. What have you noticed that cannabis has helped people sleep? Like that, you know, it seems like so many people suffer from sleep symptoms and that can lead to other symptoms that keep you unhealthy. Have you noticed just not one instance, but multiple instances where cannabis has helped with sleep?
Mm-hmm. In fact, most of my clients have a sleep issue that's either a primary issue or it's related to one of their disease states. And sleep is so important. And it's one of the first things I want to know when I start working with a client is, how are you sleeping? Because like you said, when you don't get enough sleep, it affects everything.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're in chronic pain and you can't sleep because you keep waking up every time you move, then you're getting more and more sleep deprived, which makes the pain worse. It increases inflammation. It has a risk on, you know, obesity and heart disease and strokes. And, you know, sleep is just so kind of central to everything. And until we get the sleep issue managed, you know, you're just not going to see the types of effects that they're looking for by using cannabis, because you can't be sleep deprived and feel good.
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, sleep is a very common complaint. Probably the second most common complaint that I get. The first one is usually pain.
Mm-hmm.
But it is in just about every patient that I work with, and cannabis is wonderful. You can use it strategically depending on what your issue is. So for example, if your issue is falling asleep, then you can use a vape pen, which is basically you're using the vaporized version of either flower or an oil concentrate. And that method starts to work in about 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have PTSD and you're waking up with a night terror, if you take a hit or two off of your vape pen, you're going to get immediate relief. You know, your anxiety will be, relieved, and you can fall back to sleep. And it also affects, especially with PTSD, you know, there are five different stages of sleep. The most restorative one is the deep sleep, which is stage 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where cannabis really has its most therapeutic effects. In REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement, that's the fifth stage. And that's where all the night terrors happen. And cannabis actually kind of shortens the REM period. So if you're dealing with any kind of, you know, PTSD or issues with nightmares or you're waking up in the middle of the night with horrible anxiety, cannabis is very, very effective for that. Now, if you are able to fall asleep, but then you can't stay asleep, you know, a lot of menopausal women have issues with that, with sleeping and being able to stay asleep. If you use edibles can take up to 3 hours before you actually feel the effects,
mm-hmm.
but they last for 6 to 8 hours.
Mm.
Conversely, I was talking about with the vapor, it's very quick, but it only lasts 1 to 2 hours. So if your issue is staying asleep for 6 to 8 hours, if you take, you don't need to take a lot, you can take, you know, 5 milligrams of cannabis 2 or 3 hours before you want to fall asleep, then you can fall asleep easily and stay asleep for at least 6 to 8 hours. So, you know, I have one client who was waking up every 2 hours. He sent me a text and he said, "I'm sleeping 8 to 9 hours, .. heaven." So, you know, it's such an important aspect of our health and our mental health, our physical health, our sense of well-being. So, anybody who has issues with sleep, I really encourage them to look into using cannabis to help them with that, because it's much safer than the sleeping you know, the pharmaceutical sleep meds. So,
oh my goodness. Like yeah. where you like forget that you opened up a fridge and ate like an entire dinner. And then like, I was watching some of those documentaries. I was like, my goodness, it's scary. Like when you actually look at the side effects of those sleepy medications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And again, it goes to the reducing harm, yes. you know, so. Yeah.
Totally. And I think this is perfect. This is my next question. And I mean, transparently, guys, that everyone that's listening, like cannabis, it doesn't work for everybody. And to be to be transparent about that, right? And so, you know, I noticed on your website, you talk about, you know, the benefits of cannabis and the risks associated with cannabis. And you paint a little bit of a picture of certain risks that people should know about as it relates to cannabis.
Right. Yeah. So, you need to check first if there's any drug interactions between any pharmaceutical drugs that you're taking and cannabis. So there's an app. If you go to the App Store, Google or whatever, it's called Medscape. And they have a drug interaction checker. And all you need to do is put in marijuana as one of the drugs and whatever pharmaceutical drug you're taking, and it will automatically come up and let you know if there are any interactions.
Wow.
So, yeah, because the concern with cannabis is, especially with edibles, with CBD, it gets metabolized in the liver by the same enzyme that a lot of pharmaceutical drugs get metabolized, and the body likes cannabinoids because it's almost identical to its own innate substances. So it will metabolize the CBD first because that's its preference.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're constantly ingesting CBD and the liver isn't able to metabolize or break down the pharmaceutical drug, that the blood level of the pharmaceutical drug will increase rather than decrease. So Coumadin, which is an anticoagulant, it's a very common medication for people who have various types of heart disease. And that's a perfect example. There is an interaction between cannabis and Coumadin. So if blood levels of Coumadin are increasing, then the person is at risk for hemorrhage or for stroke or any of that. So I don't mean to scare anybody or to discourage anyone from using cannabis because there is a workaround.
Mm-hmm.
If you give the liver a 2-hour break between one and the other, so let's say you take your pharmaceutical drug first thing in the morning, just don't take your cannabis for at least 2 hours.
I see.
And that gives the liver the chance to, you know, do its thing for each substance. And you could interchange it. If you want to take cannabis first and the pharmaceutical second, it doesn't matter. Just have that gap between the two.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. And also, I think this is, you know, plug to Nurse Susan. This is why you should go on her website and, you know, give her a ring and talk with her because, you know, I see, you know, cannabis, it's like medical cannabis and adult use cannabis. And, you know, people like myself, I'm like, I would love to talk to you to tell you the truth about, oh, these are the things that I'm doing in my health regime. Like, what other products can I be using? Because, you know, a lot of this is like, you want to talk to somebody that understands the body and understands why the body works in a certain way. And, you know.
Yeah. You know, that's what I tell my clients is that, you know, cannabis is not a miracle drug. If you're having other lifestyle choices that are detrimental to your health, it's not like by taking cannabis, you're kind of, you know, voiding those out. You
yes.
really need to have a holistic approach to improving your overall health. So I always talk to people about their diet.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage using raw cannabis, which has no psychoactivity, but is an excellent anti-inflammatory. You can just throw a couple leaves and a bud or two into your smoothie in the morning and, you know, you get all the benefits of cannabinoids without any psychoactivity, and it's very, very healthy for you. Incorporating, you know, hemp seeds into your diet is also, you know, it's a great source of protein and omega-3s. So anyway, there are a lot of things that I like to talk to people about in terms of making them feel as good as they can feel and be as healthy as possible.
Oh, yes. All right, Susan, are you ready for the speed round?
Sure.
All right. So what is one piece of advice you would give somebody just getting into the cannabis industry?
Just getting into the industry, I would tell them they really need to educate themselves. You cannot be in this industry and not know the endocannabinoid system and how cannabis interacts, et cetera.
Yeah. What is your why? You know, why do you do all the things that you're doing right now?
I do it because I have gotten so much benefit from cannabis. I hate to see people suffering. I want them to know. I just want them to be happy and feel better like it did for me. You know, I was facing this, you know, future of just becoming more and more disabled from the tremors, and it was very depressing. So to be able to find something that is managing that for me so that that's not my future, you know, it's hard to describe how what a sense of gratitude you get from that. So,
oh, I bet. Yeah. I mean, it's your health, and to be able to provide that, you know, opportunity to other people in need. It seems so rewarding.
It is very, very
and needed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last but definitely not least, where do you see yourself and your company, Dear Nurse Susan, a year from today?
So a year from today, I see us as the premier go-to educational site for bud tenders, healthcare professionals, and the public. I see a team of nurses that will be working with, you know, patients and doing it's called telemedicine, where basically you're working over the phone with somebody. And also, you know, kind of out there in the front lines, being in the front lines of the whole cannabis medical arena is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really think cannabis is going to have a huge impact on how we access our healthcare and how we manage our health. And, you know, so I want to be on the front lines of that and the go-to person for, you know, education and treatment and consultations and. So,
Well, I know you're going to be there, and I know you already are there, so I cannot wait to see, you know, you in a year from today. Well, thank you so much for joining Cannabis Business Minds, and for everyone that's listening, please make sure that you check out DearNurseSusan.com to talk with Nurse Susan. She's an RN, a BSN, a PE, I don't even know, a PHN, and one of the, you know, the most knowledgeable people that I know in this space. So, Susan, thank you again for joining the show.
Oh, it was my pleasure, as always, Simone. I'm so appreciate all that you do for, you know, helping people learn about cannabis and become successful business people. And really, you do a really great service.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And thank you all so much for listening to Cannabis Business Minds. I'm your podcast host, Simone Simluka-Radzins with Kalogia. Connect with me on kalogia.com, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to today's show. This is your host, Simone Simluka-Radzins of Kalogia.com. I hope that you find this episode entertaining and insightful. My goal is to educate all of you about this exciting business because knowledge is power. If you haven't already, head on over to Kalogia.com to connect with me and to meet other business leaders in the professional cannabis community. Also, if you like this, please go into iTunes and leave the Cannabis Business Minds podcast a 5-star review. See you next episode.